This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by Berkeley Life Nitric Oxide Support Supplements. Nitric oxide is a vital signaling molecule in cardiovascular health. We all make nitric oxide in our bodies, but as we age, it starts to diminish naturally. Being proactive in maintaining nitric oxide levels is vital for healthful aging because an underperforming cardiovascular system will limit the effectiveness of any other supplementation in your regimen. Just two capsules of Berkeley Life daily provides the dietary nitrate equivalent of 7 ounces of beets and can support energy levels, maintain healthy blood pressure levels, and improve general circulation. It's the professional-grade nitric oxide supplement that I recommend and prescribe for my patients. This is only available from healthcare providers. To get your Berkeley Life professional supplements, just go to drhoffman.com/Berkeley Life. That's drhoffman.com/Berkeley Life. You can also get Berkeley Life's patented nitric oxide test strips to conveniently test your own nitric oxide levels safely and easily at home. That's drhoffman.com/Berkeley Life for Berkeley Life nitric oxide supplements. Welcome to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. Today we're going to hear from Nathan Jones. Nathan is the CEO and founder of Clear, Inc. Clear nasal products, something that you've heard about. Also, Spry dental products for prevention of periodontal disease and tooth decay. That's the company that he heads up. It's spelled X-L-E-A-R. Nathan is an innovator in this field. You've heard him here before, but the folks at Clear have been busy even during the lockdown, during the pandemic, and we're going to discuss some aspects of sinus prevention with potentially some applications to coronavirus, because, you know, I've listed a series of plausible nutrients that can help safeguard people from coronavirus infection or prevent the serious consequences of COVID-19. And when I produce a list of a couple of dozen plausible things, I always include Clear because, well, frankly, coronavirus is a respiratory infection. And there's some very, very good documentation that the use of xylitol-based nasal products may have a beneficial effect on respiratory problems. And so I think it deserves a look in relationship to the current crisis. So here's Nathan Jones. Nathan, how are you doing?
Well, I'm doing great. You know, I live out in Utah, so I'm not on the same level of lockdown as you people in the big city of New York.
Yeah, you know, and I must admit, you know, I took a walk today, and it's been a very cold and rainy and kind of gloomy spring, but it was beautiful today, and I took a walk. They opened up a Broadway to pedestrian traffic. And so I decided I was going to take a walk. And, you know, I did my 10,000 steps. And I have to say, I came away with a sense of depression because the streets are relatively empty, except for the homeless people who are sort of sitting around, wandering around. They're sitting in the doorways of now shuttered restaurants. Some of the restaurants have signs for lease because they've gone out of business. And the lockdown is persisting, and there's no prospect of recovery of the glory of New York City. It's almost like, you know, my city in ruins, you know, to quote the song. You know, I came away with a sense of like, oh my goodness, the devastation from the lockdown may be worse than the devastation from the viral infection itself.
Can't argue that. I have not been in New York City for months.
Right. And
in fact, I haven't even been out of Utah for months.
Yeah. So what's the situation down there? Have they opened up restaurants and have they opened up businesses? Can you is it mandatory to wear masks wherever you go? Or is it a little bit more liberalized there?
I have a mask that, you know, if I go to Costco, I use it, mm-hmm. Which I've done once. But other than that, I haven't seen anything. The restaurants are open, but you have to, you know, they're only seating at every other table.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to think of it. I mean, to be honest, it really hasn't affected us
Has your community been hit very hard? There are a lot of cases. Are the hospitals overwhelmed? Are flattening the curve?
They do this every night on the news, and I do watch the news. And I think it's like 3,000 cases in the entire state. And
cases,
like
not deaths. I mean, that would be, if we had 3,000
like
deaths in New York, that would be good already. Yeah, 50, okay.
No, like 50 people died. Mm-hmm. And it's like 400, 500 have been hospitalized.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, you can't say it's because there are, you know, small families there in Utah. Utah is a state of, big, big families. It's just more spread out. There's less transportation.
That depends on what your definition of big is.
Oh, okay.
There aren't very many people out here that have families of more than 10 children. And that's my threshold for what I call a big family.
How many siblings do you have?
13.
What did you say?
I said 13.
13. Okay. So it's all relative, right?
Yes, they are all relatives.
Yeah. Oh, that. Ba-dum-dum. How's Clear coping with the challenges of coronavirus? I mean, a lot of retail stores are closed. Of course, pharmacies are essential. And so you can get Clear at, you know, all the major pharmacies, and you can get them at many of the health food store chains. I mean, have you had any problems?
No. The only problem we've had is gearing up overnight to double our manufacturing capacity.
Hmm.
And I mean, we early on, we had a bunch of doctors that were out talking, and people would ask them and say, well, what can we do to do this? These are doctors that we have no tie to, but they were writing in their blogs, they were writing articles, they were on TV, they were doing other stuff.
Including yours truly,
well,
you know, like myself, yeah.
Yeah. That we're all out there going and saying, you know, you can, there really isn't that much you can do to prevent it. This is what you can do if you get it, and they give you a list. But the only thing really right now that we know that you can do to prevent it is to actually have a healthy airway. Mm-hmm. And Clear is your best option to achieve that, because using the xylitol hydrates your airway and helps it function correctly, as opposed to all the other things, which are going to dry them out and, you know, make it so it doesn't work correctly.
So, okay, given, and this is, it's too early to say, and I don't know if they'll ever do a study like this, there's no study that documents that regular use of Clear nasal spray will in any way attenuate COVID-19, reduce the risk of catching it, or assure that you get a better outcome. But do we have precedence from looking at other types of respiratory infections that might lead us to infer that there, at least hypothetically, there may be a benefit?
Hypothetically, you could look at it, because you can go back to you know, in case anybody doesn't know, my father is the one that first started. He's a physician, and he's the one that first started using a nasal spray with xylitol.
Lon Jones, yeah.
Correct. And he came up with the idea after he read a bunch of dental studies that really discussed something that they thought was an anomaly and really interesting. But people who were using chewing gum with xylitol in dental research studies, you know, they were seeing how it was preventing them from getting tooth decay. And what they started noticing in all the data that they collected in these studies is the people that were using it for chewing and in chewing gum, not only were they not getting the cavities, but they were also getting 42% fewer ear infections, upper respiratory infections, just by chewing gum with xylitol.
Okay.
And
this is in the context of him having a large family practice in an area of the country where, it was, my impression was that it was very rural. He was kind of like a country doc. He was looking for ways to reduce the toll on children and families, you know, whenever the flu season or the cold season came around.
Correct. Well, ear infections happen all the time.
Mm-hmm.
But that is exactly what he was doing. He was trying to find something, because he's not a huge believer in the overuse of antibiotics.
Mm-hmm.
And he thinks that, you know, that your average physician hands them out like they're candy, you know, or opioids or whatever, you know, they just hand them out to anybody. I guess that was a cynical comment on my part. I'm sorry.
Here's what it is. You're sick. your kid's sick, your kid's in pain, they're crying. And the mode of exchange in a doctor's visit, I mean, because you're going to pay for your doctor's visit, whether you know it or not, I mean, you've got at least to pay a copay, is you bring your kid, and the quid pro quo is you get an RX. You don't just get, you know, reassurance or go buy an over-the-counter product. This is a medical intervention, so you're going to get a medical treatment, right? So, you know, that's the name of the game. That's why we overprescribe medications so much. Doctors even know that, you know, medications are not that helpful for these problems, but they're compelled to give patients something of perceived value for an infection. And, you know, the net result is they overprescribe.
100%. I agree with that. But what he started doing is, you know, you obviously can't give chewing gum to an infant. And so he actually came up with the idea of using it in nasal spray. And the reason why the 42% number is significant is because that's roughly the amount of upper respiratory infections that are actually caused by bacteria. Because, you know, another half of them or thereabouts is caused by viruses. And then there's some that is caused by mold and other things. But what he found is that the kids that started using this nasal spray stopped getting sick, period. Okay? In all of the data that he collected from his, and he actually published a paper on it, in the data that he collected from his patients, it was a 92% reduction, and the anomaly and that 8% was because there was one kid who refused to let him spray this stuff up there, the sugar water up their nose.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And however, most kids love it. That. I mean, kids in my family, you know, you've been generous enough to send me samples, and they actually ask for it. You know, they say, and you know, the cute. I got a couple of cute videos. I haven't sent them to you of one of the kids in my family. There's a little ritual. He gets his nose sprayed, and then he wants to. Of course, we put the cap on so he doesn't, you know, spread his cooties to, you know, the rest of the family. But he pantomimes that he's doing everybody else. He wants to spray their nose too, because he's got, like, I guess there's a bit of a, he's got a doctor instinct, you know, that he wants to safeguard the other people. So, you know, kids mostly don't reject that. It's not painful or uncomfortable or taste bad. I have a question for you though. We have very clearly documented that xylitol is antibacterial. From discussing it with you and from my reading, it acts as kind of a Trojan horse. The bacteria accept it as if it were a normal sugar, but it's actually a sugar that, does not, that kind of gums up the works in the bacteria without feeding the bacteria. I think that's the short, you know, classics illustrated version of how it works. But against a virus, how could xylitol or a moistening nasal spray have any efficacy against a virus? Because it doesn't, the virus doesn't eat the sugar, to my knowledge.
Correct. And that is a very good question, and it is a question that I think deserves some more research. And I'll explain why I think it is. But there have actually been studies published. There was a study that was published a couple of years ago. I'm trying to think when it was. It wasn't that long ago, but in the last couple of years, that was done in Korea, South Korea, not North Korea. South Korea's sinus is much better than North Korea's. but they took these mice and they gave them a lethal dose of influenza, of the flu virus. And they gave some of them ginseng and some of them xylitol. The ones with ginseng, it was like 30% of them survived. The ones with xylitol, it was almost 80%.
And there actually is some evidence that ginsengs have some sort of antiviral effect. They work at some level against a virus. So that would be the 30%. But again, xylitol, how plausibly might that work to reduce the mortality of these experimental animals?
Well, that is the question, because we aren't 100% certain, and we don't know. Because in the studies, they were eating it. Mm-hmm. They weren't spraying it up their nose. Hmm. And the only way that I can, and I've discussed this with many people that are way smarter than I am, you know, physicians, doctors, dentists, and stuff like that. And really, the only answer that we come up with is that the xylitol, eating it, you're actually creating a healthier microbiome in your body.
Mm-hmm.
We aren't positive that that's the case, but that's what we're speculating. Mm-hmm. And that's why I'm saying it needs a little bit more research.
Destroy pathogenic bacteria, and that somehow leads to immune alterations that somehow may indirectly support antiviral resistance. I guess there's maybe an indirect effect that is, without killing the virus directly, that it somehow has a good effect on the immune system. But I'll point out, you know, recently I was reading a very technical article on coronavirus. They're beginning to understand a little bit how it attacks the body. The coronavirus has to attach to what are called ACE2 receptors. And there are ACE2 receptors everywhere in the body. They're in the kidneys, they're in the liver, they're in the blood vessels. And that may account for the fact that there's such pervasive problems in people who get very sick with coronavirus. They're hospitalized and they end up on ventilators and they end up dying because there's just receptors for this virus everywhere in the body. But where it starts and where there are most receptors are in the nasal passages. And so what they suggest is that there may be two phases for this. You know, people get ordinary mild coronavirus infection, which sometimes is characterized by a loss of taste and smell. That's clearly involving the olfactory nerves that are in the nasal passages. And or maybe they get a sore throat, or, you know, maybe they get, malaise, body aches, and fever. But at that point, it's a local reaction. It is a true URI, an upper respiratory infection. But then in some people, and we don't know exactly why some people are prone to this, it then propagates to the lungs, where there are a lot of ACE2 receptors. And in the lungs, that's when it explodes. And it creates that, you know, maybe the 20% of cases that are very serious, a fairly high percentage of which go on to die. And the thought there, and I thought to myself, well, that'd be great if we could just stop it in the nasal passages, because that's the breeding ground for the virus. The virus replicates and propagates and has a good time there. It's unrestrained. And then it escapes maybe by gravity down into the lungs, or maybe it's propelled down the mucus bed into the lungs. And that's where it finds more ACE2 receptors. It attaches, and then we're off to the races. So is that a plausible scenario in your mind?
Yeah, it is, but I think that if you have a healthy, hydrated airway, you're gonna reduce the chances of that happening.
Because mm-hmm. there are lots of natural defenses in the airway. They're what are called cilia.
Lots of them.
It's like there's actually a little bed of tiny hairs that move the mucus back up, and then, you know, prevent the mucus from accumulating in the deep recesses of the lungs and the alveoli, where there are a lot of ACE2 receptors, and perhaps enhancing these natural barriers, these natural defenses, may be a way of curtailing the more serious manifestations of coronavirus. That's at least a theory.
That could be. I mean, in my opinion, and again, I'm not a physician. I'm not a doctor. I've just been in this business and in this industry for, you know, 20 years, so I've learned a little bit.
Yeah, but I got to say, you have an advantage because you're not a doctor, because we have to sort of be very eclectic, you know, and know everything. What you do is you've had sort of for the past many years.
That was a great answer. I just have to tell you, that was a great answer.
No, but seriously.
You have to know everything.
back at you is that you've had sort of a laser-like focus on respiratory health, and you're a voracious reader, and you read all the research on, you know, sinus problems and asthma and, you know, everything that has to do with the respiratory system. And so I'm going to award you an honorary PhD here. Okay. Right here on the spot on just.
No, I need a bachelor's first.
Okay. You know what you are? I don't know if you know the word. You're an autodidact. You know what an autodidact is?
I know what they are.
It's a self-taught, you know, like a smart person.
Yeah, yeah.
Right. Okay.
Hey, I have a degree. It's just in underwater welding.
Oh, okay.
This is completely different.
Right. Well,
so I can go and pull you in.
I wasn't smart
enough. An oil platform.
I wasn't smart enough to do that. I had to go to med school. Like, you know, I wouldn't have qualified as an underwater diver.
Yeah.
But anyway, so
well, going back a little bit, And this goes back to my dad, because I, you know, we went off on a tangent, but coming back to what my dad said and what he did is he expected, when he used this nasal spray, he expected to get a 50% reduction in upper respiratory infections. Because that's the number, roughly, the percentage of them that are caused by bacteria.
Bacteria, okay.
And the fact that he got a 92% showed that there was something else that was going on.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, we didn't know what it was. We didn't understand it. We understood that there was no harm.
Mm-hmm.
We understood that xylitol is not absorbed, that if you spray it up your nose, it's going to end up in your stomach and there's no harm. And so we went out and we started selling this product. Because it doesn't actively kill the bacteria or the virus, we can't call it a drug. It's simply a cosmetic. It washes all of this stuff out of your airway.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't until 8 years ago, a doctor in a Suli out of Washington, D.C. area, out of Georgetown, that he actually started talking and doing some research, and he presented his research in 2015 at the American Academy of Allergy, Asthma, Immunology, and it really kind of showed what it's doing. And the reason why it also helps with viruses, and this is still a theory, but it's a much stronger theory, is that when you spray it in your nose, xylitol is not absorbed. Okay? When you spray a saline in your nose, it is absorbed. Mm-hmm. And so when you spray a saline in your nose, it's going to keep your nose moist for a couple of, 30 minutes, 40 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
But after that, the salt is transported into the tissue.
Right.
The water's going to follow it, and it's going to dry your nose out.
Right. It's sort of like the pickling phenomenon. If you take a cucumber and you put it into salty water, it's going to shrink and pucker. That's a little bit what happens to your nasal mucosa if you apply a lot of salt up there day in and day out.
And you know what? I have never heard that comparison, and as soon as we get off this, I'm going to go have my kids do a science project, and that's what it's going to be.
Go ahead and run with it,
I've never seen it, and I'm interested to see it. But what he showed is saline's absorbed, and there the salt is absorbed, then the water follows it, so it's going to dry your nose out. But what the xylitol does, it's not absorbed, so it
maintains
sits there
the moisture.
Not only does it maintain the moisture, but it's going to osmotically pull moisture out of the tissue.
Okay.
And what he showed and what he presented, and I mean, we can show, you can find the graphs on our webpage, the graphs that he did, because given us permission to use them, is that by using our nasal spray once in the morning and once at night, in 3 weeks, the people that were using it had a 36% improvement in their airway volume.
Wow.
And that's a pretty big number to find for a sugar water being sprayed up your nose.
We're just riffing here, but I want to share an idea that I have with you, which is, it has to do with the microbiome. We talk a lot about the intestinal microbiome and how, if you have a messed up intestinal microbiome, you may be more prone to viral infections. The people on the cruise ships, for example, who get, terrible gastrointestinal ailments, like norovirus, they actually did a study and they found that a very high percentage of them were taking PPIs, proton pump inhibitors, acid blocking drugs, which mess up the microbiome and, cause bacterial overgrowth and dysbiosis. And yet it's a virus that causes the norovirus. So how could that be? Well, it has to do with the microbiome. There's a microbiome in your nasal passages. And if your microbiome is messed up with bacterial overgrowth, or conditions of moisture, which dry it or change the pH in some harmful way, it may render you more susceptible to viral infections. Again, I'm just speculating here, and this is a theory, but, I think we need to, do some further research on this. I think that anything that supports the healthy microbiome of your nasal passages, that's got to be something that, at least hypothetically, has some protective effects against the viral proliferation, the attachment to the receptors, and, ultimately, whether you're going to have a mild or a severe course of a viral infection. I just laying that out.
Well, no, and that's exactly what I would have said. And so I'm glad you said it, because, that is really what it boils down to, is there's two things. One is exactly what you said, your microbiome. And the other one is making sure, and I know this sounds gross, but I could use the word mucus. It's a little bit more politically correct or sanitized, but I'm going to use the word snot because it rolls off my tongue better. But if you have that thin layer of snot and it is maintained, you're not going to get sick that often.
Mm-hmm.
Because in your snot, you have, and I can't remember the name of what they're called.
Immunoglobulins.
Mucins,
immunoglobulins. You have all kinds of protective substances. You know, that's why.
Correct.
I mean, you know, the instinct of animals, you know, when they're injured is like, you know, they'll lick a wound, you know, because there's in the saliva, in the nasal mucus, there are protective substances.
Well, then why do we pee on jellyfish wounds?
That's a whole other thing.
No, I'm kidding.
That's
my natural instinct. I'm kidding.
No. Don't try this at home.
But that's exactly, you know, what it is you have all these things in a healthy nasal passage.
Mm-hmm.
But the problem is that in our over-medicated society, people are using antihistamines, decongestants, nasal steroids,
yeah,
all of these things way more than they need to be.
That's
and
bad.
All of these things dry out your airway.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know,
and
even,
not
even,
only that, but and, you have drugs that people are taking for hypertension, that cause
antidepressants,
dry mouth, they all dry you out.
Yeah, all these kinds of things. All these medications have a dry mouth effect. You know, the psychiatric drugs that we use, the antihypertensive drugs that we use, the medications that we use for urinary frequency, you know, a lot of, especially older people use, they have a drying out effect. Okay, folks, at this point, let's pause and allow one of our sponsors an opportunity to share this important message with you. This is Dr. Ronald Hoffman with one of my personal solutions to better cardiovascular health, Berkeley Life Nitric Oxide Support Supplements. Just 2 capsules of Berkeley Life daily provide the dietary nitrate equivalent of 7 ounces of beets and can support cardiovascular health, maintain healthy blood pressure levels, and improve overall circulation. For more information and to purchase, just go to drhoffman.com/berkeleylife. drhoffman.com/berkeleylife. Berkeley Life Nitric Oxide Support Supplements. Thanks for listening and thanks for supporting our sponsors. They're what make Intelligent Medicine the continuing free resource to you. And now back to our guest, Nathan Jones. Just speculating, you know, they talk about comorbidities, hypertension, diabetes. You know, you shared with me in a previous conversation, you said, you know, maybe it's not those conditions per se, maybe it's the medications that are being used to treat those conditions that has a negative effect on respiratory health. I mean, that is a plausible hypothesis. It's worth investigating.
Well, I think it should be investigated because, you know, the U.S. is getting hit just as hard, if not harder, than anybody else with the per capita people that catch this mm-hmm. coronavirus and die.
But we're the
and
most medicated society in the world, more so than any other country. Yeah. Yeah.
So that would actually make sense given the, you know, all of the data.
Okay. Great conversation. Let's pause because we divide our podcast into 2 parts. In part 2, I want to talk about what CLEAR is looking at for the future because you have some interesting research projects on the drawing boards, as well as,
not rolling. Interesting. These are great.
Okay.
Great.
All right. I'm sorry. It's like, okay. I'm a little low key. So, you know.
Okay.
Restraint is the word. We're going to talk about those in part 2. Today's guest, Nathan Jones. Nathan is the CEO and founder of CLEAR, Inc. And amidst the coronavirus pandemic, respiratory health is our special concern. So we'll find out more about what's in store on the product side from CLEAR. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.